This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust, and I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
Welcome to Baldly Go, the officially unofficial podcast for all of Star Trek. This week, we're talking about Season 2, Episode 9 of Star Trek Strange New Worlds, Subspace Rhapsody. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
Got to mix it up. Got to do things out of order this time. Definitely not a mistake on my part. Let's roll with it. Aaron, this is the musical episode. I'm curious to know what you thought about it, and I know you're curious to know what I thought about it, because you tried to ask me before the podcast, and I said, no, wait, let's save it.
Saving it for the audience. I mean, I suspect that if you have been a long-term Bald Moo fan, and you've listened to a lot of what I said over the years, that you probably suspect that I love this episode, and you'd be right. I thought this episode was so much fun the first time I saw it. The second time I saw it, I liked it even better. I actually, you know, when I actually was paying more attention to like the lyrical content, I thought some of the stuff, the character beats were actually moving. But then again, you know, you get this heightened emotion through the singing. I thought it was well integrated into the scientific canon of Star Trek as that it can go. And yeah, it was just a lot of fun. I mean, the feeling that I felt when the Klingons came on the view screen and broke things down Backstreet Boys style. I mean, like I said, I fucking love it. I got more to say how this fits in with the overall experiment that is Strange New Worlds. But of course, people really want to know, what did Jim, what did the robot man make of the singy music episode?
I like some musicals. It's definitely not my favorite genre. I've seen a few that, you know, a few of like the all-time greats, and those are fun. Those are interesting. They always do something, you know, a little outside of the box with their songs and whatnot. I thought this episode sucked. Not because it's a musical, because I like some musicals. It's just a bad musical. It does nothing inventive or creative. Like, look, my idea of a good time is definitely not watching an hour of mediocre to bad pop music, especially when paired with just mind-numbingly boring visuals. They do nothing interesting with the visuals during these songs. And the music itself is not creative in any way. I remember we recently watched Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, and they do stuff that is 10 times better than anything, even the grand finale of this episode, that Star Trek has pulled off.
Sir, the Enterprise does a waltz with three Klingon battle cruisers, and you're saying that there's no inventive music?
They saved up everything for that finale, and it made the rest of the episode incredibly boring. It's like they wanted to create a contrast that really just sucked the life out of the rest of the episode.
I will say that I don't find anything terribly offensive with your take, because I think it is on the surface of it true. Like, these are not groundbreaking pieces of music. I don't think they're supposed to be. I think they're intentionally aping the styles of, you know, Rodgers and Hammerstein, and who's the guy that did the... That's the guy that did Sound of Music. The guy that did the like Chitty Chitty Bang Bang and Mary Poppins. I got all these notes in my head, but like I think they're supposed to be kind of like going through the classic show tunes kind of sound catalog. And some of the crew don't sing great. Some of the crew I think sing very, very well. La'an and Uhura especially I think are standouts.
Yeah, and I'm not going to take much away from them. You know, they didn't sign up to do a musical, right? They signed up to do Star Trek. So That's not a huge problem. It's just I wish they would have done something more creative with him. Like, I guess if they're doing that, if they're like slyly winking toward musicals of yesteryear, I wouldn't get any of that. It'd all be lost on me. So
it's not that sly. It's just like it's like they're just trying to feel like I check off all their boxes. And it's you know, the other thing I appreciated about it is like there's a lot of like season long and in some cases multi season long arcs that came to a head in this episode and let like characters kind of like talk about, you know, they're trying new directions or how they feel about certain relationships that are forming and collapsing and how we feel about our place, you know, have we finally found our place on the Enterprise. And I, like I said, I think the first third of this show coasted on the, for me, apparently did not work totally on you. This is a real bummer to talk about. If you hate the episode this much, and I loved it. But like, I thought the first third coasted by on just everyone's bemused or distressed reactions of being forced to sing. I particularly like Pike and La'an's, you know, especially La'an's physical discomfort at like giving a security report on a bridge in the form of song. And her dread of, like, you know, what's this going to be when her and Jim get alone. I thought the middle was the most draggy part because that's where it was kind of carried by Nurse Chapel and Spock. And I don't, not super invested in them. But I thought the Uhura's, you know, her little, what would you call those? Not a monologue, solo. Her solo
one?
Where
she gets a couple, right? Like,
Yeah. I think she's one of the better singers, and she, you know, realizes her connect. You know, that she's the one that makes connections. I thought that was
the lyrics.
I thought that was really great, and then leading up to the finale. I don't know. Like I said, it totally worked. I liked seeing all the red shirts running and leaping in the corridors. I like seeing all the bridge crew, you know, holding hands and talking about how they're the boldly explorational crew of the Starship Enterprise.
Yeah, that's
kind of
a
bummer. I thought you would at least like it okay.
No, I don't know. I think it's just bad direction. I think like the director needed to do something more creative with the visuals while people were singing, because that there is two Uhura songs. There's one that's like downbeat and supposed to be, you know, her struggling with her predicament and stuff. Or no, I'm sorry. That's La'an's song. La'an has like a really like kind of poignant song in her quarters or whatever. That
yeah,
I thought didn't need much embellishment. But then you get to all the other songs, and I mean, the most fun that I had, I guess, was when Chapel's in the bar and she's just kind of dancing around and, you know, getting lifted up. There's a little bit of flourish there. That wasn't bad.
Interesting, because that's my least favorite song, the I'm Ready.
Yeah, I don't know if the song was amazing, but they're at least trying to do something visually interesting there. But man, that Uhura song in Engineering, they're literally just like, I don't know, move the camera back and forth. That seems cool. And I just think it was bad directing for the most part.
A lot of
and,
Una
I don't
danced
think the songs
in
were very
the air?
Either.
Don't ever, I'm going to tell you what, this discipline, and don't ever watch La La Land, because boy, you'll really...
I
want to be disappointed in a musical.
I mean, did they dance in the air? Or did they just hold hands for like a second as they floated? It wasn't. It wasn't that creative. I expect more out of a musical, I guess. Like if you can't hit,
oh, I mean,
at
come
least
on,
a note
Pike,
as high as Book of Mormon.
I don't know
what I'm doing.
Well, I mean, you're comparing this to like one of the best comedy musicals in this, you know, the last. What, 20 years?
Written by two guys who don't do musicals. Like,
oh,
come on.
That's, I don't know. I feel like that is a natural outgrowth of the work that they did on South Park and whatnot. But, like,
yeah,
so you didn't like Pike, you know, being put in this compromising situation with Patel and on the main screen and, like, that scene of, like, La'an crossing the entire bridge to hang up on Batal. So, like, the captain's feelings
sure.
were spared. That shit
has its moments.
So,
it's not. Because
the other thing is,
devoid,
I thought.
But...
If we set the music stuff aside, that you clearly are not happy with the inventiveness and the direction of, do you think that the episode held together just as a piece of Star Trek story? Like, did we get, like, you know, character development, plot development?
They were trying there. They I will say it was admirable the way they tried to, like, connect this to science in a way, right? Like a subspace fold that's is creating a different reality that they're stuck in, and it's spreading across, you know, the Federation and the Klingon Empire. That stuff, they at least tried there, but that was the most creativity they showed in the entire thing. I don't know. You've got, and this is unconnected to anything else, right? This, like, with the plots that are happening right now, you could have foreseen this coming at the beginning of the season and really spent some time on this and made it something special. And I really don't feel like they did. I feel like this was just kind of slapdash. Like, I don't know.
I'm scared now because, like, I don't know about
her dead family blowing up in a shuttle. That'll be funny, right? No, that's horrible.
But that wasn't a funny song either. They weren't playing that one for laughs. I don't know. I'm curious to see what the public reaction, if this is going to be like giga cringe, like you're seeing it, or if it's going to be more along like, I mean, but I, because my larger point I was trying to make is I think that Strange New World is showing this really ideal blend of the things I like Star Trek the most. So you got like 1/3 of the episodes in a given season are just straightforward, thoughtful, thought-provoking sci-fi short stories and like what if, you know, segments. Like what if you were on a planet where no one could form long-term memories, you know? What if, there's a 1/3 like very interesting and moving character work, you know, dealing with like the trauma of war with Mbinga and Chapel. And then there's about a 1/3 that's just, I think, silly fun experiments, you know, like Spock, YA, dating his kooky Vulcan fiancé and
becoming human during that whole
process. Turning to human and this. And to me, that is the ideal ratio. If I confess, like, you know, I love the best of both worlds as much as the next Star Trek fan, but I really like the weird stuff like Data's Day and the Captain's Holiday. And I can't remember what the episode when Q came and took them all into the Nottingham Forest. Yeah. And they did the Robin Hood stuff. Like, I like those little one-off adventures or something that is just a weird thing that the show does. Not all of them work. But I'm glad that they went for it. And I'm curious, like, I think your odds of liking this was a lot lower than the probably baseline Star Trek fan. But I don't even know that's true. I don't know how much crossover there is with musical fans and Star Trek fans. And
I don't know either.
I was hoping that if people weren't musical fans, they would like this episode just because it does ape so many popular styles that people are familiar with. And I thought the lyrical, there's a few awkward phrasings, but I thought actually it was a fairly sophisticated the lyrics that fit well. They weren't too strained beyond what the average like dialogue was for, you know, Starfleet officers talking on the bridge. Like, they're working towards like tactical displays and subspace frequencies and sub, you know, the warp field folding and stuff like that. And the song, which is pretty tricky,
not easy,
I would feel like.
Yeah, I agree. Like, the bar is very high because it's set by very good musicals that are musically and lyrically very complex, akin to what they're doing kind of at the end of this, but not really. They never do anything complex as some of the best musicals I've seen, for sure. But then they also have, you know, that challenge of, like, how do we work this jargon in a believable way? And, you know, what rhymes with orange kind of thing, right? Maybe ask Eminem for some advice. I don't know.
Door hinge is one of them. Yeah. I think he comes up with Lawrence with his door hinge.
But I think they missed that bar. Like, that's what I'm saying. I think there is a high bar, and yes, it's difficult, but you gotta live up to it if you're gonna do something like this. And I just don't think they did.
Well, the nice things is I don't think there are probably a lot of people who are just like lukewarm in this episode. It probably will be polarizing to the extent that you either like this and think it's fun or you hate it like Jim. So, and good news, both of your views will be represented on this podcast. So
yep.
Only you goddamn centrists are going to feel like you didn't get adequately represented. But I don't know. Maybe you can synthesize the harmonic difference between Jim's negativity and my positivity.
Blow it out your deflector dish.
Make sure you compensate the Heisenberg compensators or shit's going to get improbable.
Yep. All right. We should probably get to the episode.
Let's do it.
We get the beginning, you know, it starts with a log. It's a communication officer's log. Enterprise encounters a naturally occurring subspace fold, and Spock says it could be used to triple the speed of subspace communications in the sector. But his experiment is sucking up so much power that Uhura has to become the switchboard operator of the Enterprise. She is the computer routing calls.
Yeah, the Enterprise computer can no longer route phone calls. So Spock's using every bit of...
Wild. Yeah. All the plasma is directed right into Spock. I don't know if there's plasma in these consoles.
I wonder if there's... You know how the go-to thing is the say, like, do you know that the power in your phone is a million times more powerful than the computer that landed the Apollo module on the moon, right? You hear that all the time.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I wonder if Picard's day, like, you know, any, like, school teacher or whatever pulls off their communicator and says, do you realize the power of this communicator... is a million times more powerful than the computer that James T. Kirk piloted through. Because, yeah, like, what the fuck Texas Instruments speak and spell shit that we got that Spock doing some warp experiments is making Uhura go back to being like a 1920s switchboard girl.
Yeah.
She's like literally, I mean, it's really funny physically to watch her pushing the buttons and be like, hold for this call, please. But it's a lot.
Yeah. I wonder what systems are still online that are like wholly unnecessary, but they just didn't think to shut off to make Uhura's job a little easier.
Right.
They're like, oh yeah, we're still running the background process that like filters out poop from the transporter or something.
Are they still powering the emergency holodecks that comfort the crew in times of the ship being destroyed? I know they don't have holodecks
like Picard,
yet.
Yeah.
They don't have holodecks yet, but yeah, that's what they're doing. They're, you know, like, yeah. Do they restrict the replicator?
Right.
Do they shut down the bar?
Shut down the bar. Let Uhura have...
Shut down the bar.
Yeah.
Turn the temperature up in everyone's room up or down a few degrees. Probably down. Is it easier to keep cold in space or hot? Probably easier to keep cold.
Yeah, probably. Radiating that heat is not easy. Maybe huddle some people up in some rooms and just shut off the life support for half the ship. I don't know.
Yeah,
because she looks like she's struggling.
Load everybody into shuttlecrafts. Get it done.
She's already tired. Hasn't been sleeping. I mean, last week she went through an ordeal, man. Give her a break.
I was wondering because, like, I found myself a little bit of tension that I found fun where I was waiting for the first song to break out because, like, there's a couple things where, like, yeah, yeah. When she swivels from that chair and kind of sighs, I'm like, oh, is it going to happen now? Oh, is it going to happen now? Is it going to, like, when Batal calls and starts playing the vacations, like, is it going to start now? I wish that I did not know this musical episode was coming. So that I could just watching a Star Trek episode and like, what the fuck? Mm-hmm. But I don't even think in the old days, because when I was watching like Star Trek Next Generation on TV as it was coming out, they'd always have the next time on.
Yeah.
And there's no fucking way I'm never going to not watch that. So like, they'd have to not show it's a musical episode. Yeah, so I don't know. I don't think there's ever a point in my life I wouldn't have been spoiled by this stuff. But I did think like, man... I wish I could be the Star Trek fan that has no idea what the hell is happening when this starts up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would have been interesting. Like you said, Captains Batel and Pike planned their first vacation together, but he's not feeling it, so they postponed the planning a bit. I think she suggested going to Creville? I don't know. I don't have subtitles. I don't know this planet. It's not Ryza. So I don't know it.
Mm-mm. It sounds like it's a tourist trap.
Uh-huh.
Very, you know.
Shopping.
Yeah, yeah.
What does a Federation citizen need with shopping?
Good question.
What does that look like? Tourist traps. I mean, it's just lounging, right? I mean, that's all you can do as a tourist now. You can't. You can eat. You can drink. You can lounge.
I think she, well, I mean, it's telling that she's going to some kind of, like, presentation. Like, there's some kind of, like, museum she's going to. So it's like...
There you go. You can see where it's going.
Maybe, but maybe there's also the idea that, like, going to a planet, you can eat not replicated food. because especially in this era, it seems like they've said that there's some stuff that just doesn't replicate well. So it's like, ooh, we're going to have a real chocolate sundae or
drink some real alcohol. Actually, do the replicators...
This is non-treaty world. We can drink Romulan ale here.
Mm-hmm. We can drink whatever we want. Do the replicators in the original Enterprise create synthahol drinks, or is that just
synthahol
the next generation
for
thing?
Sure was like the old series thing, because I think that's what they say they're drinking. Wasn't that what they're drinking in Star Trek VI? Or was that actually Romulan brandy?
It's been
so long. It was
so
supposed
long.
To be synthahol, and it turns out it was actually alcohol. Yeah, but no, synthahol was the old series deal.
Okay, because I know they did in TNG. I wasn't sure about the original. Yeah, so you could probably drink real alcohol, and that'd be nice. You get a lot of kids, a lot of cadets on shore leave, a lot of ensigns who are like, hell yeah, let's go down and drink the real alcohol, and they just they don't know how to handle it.
Yeah. I think is it canon that like synthahol can be like the effects of synthahol can be voluntarily dismissed? Like, it gets you drunk, but if you intentionally think about sobering up, you'll sober up.
Yeah, it'd be nice. Or it'd be nice if they had like a chaser that would sober you up, you know?
Yeah, there you go. That can neutralize the alcohol. Oh god, I've had way too much. I'm about to throw up. Give me the
Yeah.
The
Give me the morning after. Yeah,
Well, what do they call it?
The
where
plan
you
put
B
like
shot.
Tabasco
yeah,
and
just,
orange
just
juice
the whole
or whatever
thing down before it begins. Yeah. Hair the dog, they call
yes,
it.
Yes, there you go. No. Okay, chapel.
So these guys, wait. The beer. I want to say something. I'm not digging many of the relationships on this show. And as a shipper, I'm not happy about that because I kind of want everyone to hook up. And I don't like Patel and Pike together. I think she's on to something. If he can't be honest with his opinion about her choice of vacation and tries to weasel out of it with some kind of duty shit, like what the hell? And
how
like,
many chances is he gonna get? That's
a well
thing.
The other thing is the undertone that he's keeping a lot from her. Actually, does she know about his date with Destiny?
I don't think so. No,
I don't think so either. And I think that's what you're supposed to get, is the undertone is that he is keeping her at arm's length and she's starting to feel it, and instead of like leveling with her, It's increasing the distance. So I wonder if they'll resolve that next finale, the next episode, because the last season finale kind of all dealt with Christopher Pike and his, you know, manifest or his destiny and his fate and all that. And I wonder if they'll just make that since it's been a pretty Pikeless season, you know, there hasn't been a lot of Pike. I wonder if they're going to save another like extravaganza, Pike extravaganza for the end.
It could be. It makes a lot of sense. I was going to say, well, he can't come clean and tell her about it, but we see Lon do exactly that this episode with zero consequences so far. I guess he could. That's definitely the tension there, right? Like, he can't really tell her about this. He knows this relationship is not going to be long-lived if it happens, and so he's kind of like, I want to, but I shouldn't.
Trying to protect her, I think.
Yeah.
From the
loss. That's always a bad choice, right? You should just lay the facts out there for them and let them protect themselves if they want to.
Yeah, you can make arguments for protecting children from, like, knowledge and things like that, but adults, best practices to level with them.
Yep. All right, Kirk is beaming over to the Enterprise for some training under Una. And she notices that Lon has an energy about her when Kirk is coming over. Came in here hot, on fire. It's making me sweat. I thought this was going to be the song. And I thought that would come back in a song form at some point this episode, but it doesn't. It's a weird line that kind of teases the musical angle of
this.
That's
what I'm telling you.
Really.
I think there's several points here where they're baiting the people that know this is a musical into thinking, oh, it's about to start. No, it's like a jump scare.
Bring it back, right? This should be Chekhov's Making Me Sweat. This should be like an integral theme of one of the songs later in the episode, but I don't think it really is. So I don't know. I see what they're doing. It was just a little weird.
Set Phasers to Add. We'll be right back.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
It's the 40th anniversary of Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom this week. And while the movie might be old enough to belong in a museum, our podcast is brand new. So join us for a conversation on the third or fourth best Indiana Jones movie, depending on who you ask, this Wednesday.
And if retro adventure movies aren't your thing, well, maybe you'll enjoy a time warp in the form of a prequel with the theatrical release of Furiosa. Flashback with us to a time when Charlize Theron looked like Anna Taylor-Joy, and strap in for another epic George Miller action movie this Thursday on Bald Move Pulp.
And finally, we're wrapping up our four-week coverage of the 1980 TV miniseries Shogun. Get the final verdict on Yabu, JB, Mariko, and the rest of the gang this Thursday on Bald Move Prestige.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app. Captain on Bridge, welcome back to Baldy Go.
Chapel is nervous about the message that she got from the Archaeological Medicine Fellowship. She reads it, turns out she got in, but now she has to talk to Spock about it. It's going to be hard.
She'll be gone for 3 months.
Yeah, they make it feel pretty final.
I know,
dude. Which is weird.
It feels like... That's the thing. I don't understand... Because I don't understand why Spock is being so serious about this relationship. I don't understand why she is like suddenly putting like all the brakes on the relationship. Although it does suggest that like, you know, there's been a lot of recent like traumatic events that have triggered a lot of stuff for her. This is not a fun ship so far.
I agree. Yeah. Not super interested in this angle, though. I don't know. Some of the song work they do, I think, is fun. It's like some of the most fun you have, aside from the finale, grand finale.
Yeah.
Anyway, we find out she's going to be working under Dr. Corby, which will come into play later. He's the Louis Pasteur of archaeological medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And then we go over to Spock, who's running his experiment with zero success. They cannot send messages through the subspace fold. So Pelia just kind of out of nowhere suggests they send music through the fold rather than a message, you know, for fundamental harmonics reasons. Uhura picks a song, It's Anything Goes, which I guess is a very famous musical song written by some dude a long time ago. It causes a reaction with the subspace fold, which spreads through the entire ship. And everyone starts singing their thoughts, and they don't know why. And we'll get to the rest of it here in a second.
You said it came out of nowhere, but come on. Uhura was like kind of humming absentmindedly. They're kind of establishing that as something she does when she's concentrating. And that's what caused Pella to suggest, why not blast some major fifths and modal sevenths through and see what happens? It's math.
Sure.
It's musical math.
The reason I feel like it comes out of nowhere is because Pella's tone here, the way she says these words make me think that she doesn't understand what she's saying. She's like a student who is like asking the chief engineer questions about things they have no idea about and trying to learn, as opposed to like suggesting ideas from a place of knowledge and understanding. She does not come across as somebody who knows anything about doing her job.
Why do you say that? Like, what?
It's her demeanor. It's everything about like the way she interacts with these other characters is like she just seems lost in everything.
I mean this is a phenomenon that no one has ever seen. They're actively studying, so it's like, but like I guess I didn't I don't I look man you hate Pella I don't
uh-huh
I'm not getting any of these things.
Oh, and why is 3x communication speed a good thing? Like, are you a fucking engineer or not? Do you not understand the importance of communication in every human endeavor?
Aren't they trying to suggest that, like, these young, very young, energetic people are excited about communicating 3x faster, and what does that mean for someone who's been alive for 3,000 years? She's like, she was on Earth in the days where you had to wait for the slow boat from the old world to, like, you know, make its way across a Mediterranean to get something. And it's like, I thought it's more that than, like, she doesn't understand physically how this will all work. It's like, she's like, I don't understand why you guys are so excited about this. And why would she be? Because she's super old and time is relative to her.
Did she not? I mean, she's lived through so many changes in the way societies communicate. You would think she would understand intrinsically how communication speed affects the lives of ordinary people. It changes the world.
Possibly.
I mean, her makes the case here, like, it's incredibly important, and she's just, it's all lost on her. She's oblivious. And she's multi-thousands of years old, chief engineer of the flagship of the fleet. What the fuck, lady?
On a positive note, Uhura looks so fucking cute when she starts as anything goes up, and Spock kind of cocks an eyebrow at her, and she starts doing the little, flapper dance.
And I thought there was going to be some good choreography. I was hopeful at the beginning, because there's a scene where Erica and whoever sits beside her, I don't know her fucking name because she's not a character. They kind of synchronize their movements, and they're both like, that's weird. I thought there was going to be some intricate, interesting choreography.
I think there's plenty of choreography for a 53-minute episode of television, but
the bar scene's the best. The bar scene and the grand finale. I'll give you those.
Oh, God, this is weird just at loggerheads, because the bar scene is by far, I think, the worst song.
Oh, I'm not saying anything about the music.
Okay.
I just think, like, the fun they're having, the like, what is it, Moulin Rouge-esque nature of that is much better than most of the choreography.
I do wonder, I think maybe the plot held them back, because clearly they were trying to build towards the big ensemble number, whereas a conventional musical would probably space those out, you know, more evenly, so you'd have a lot more fun people singing and clapping and dancing together, rather than just essentially solo after solo after solo, and a duet at best. But
that's what I mean, like, it felt like they were saving it all up for the end, and I think the end does hit. I like it both musically, I like it comedically, and I like it thematically, you know, that everybody on the crew works together and they are something special. I like that. But everything else seemed diminished because they were saving it all up, you know. Anyway, the intro is interesting. They do a mostly a cappella intro theme song.
Oh, we actually get to the first song. I want to talk.
Yeah.
I don't know if this is lost on you. Where they're actually singing the most unusual, so peculiar part. This is like, it gets reprised. That happens before the theme and all that. You've thrown me. Did you introduce this part?
Which part? Where the
singing. They start breaking
through
out
the ship, and they're like consternated by why they're all singing.
Like, yes. The whole first song, like the yada yada, the whole first song. Anyway,
I'm gonna yada yada all these songs. I'm gonna say they sing a song about X.
Oh, Jesus Christ. I should have led this one. All right. I really
what else
I
is
thought,
there to say? They sing a song in D minor, and it's reminiscent.
You're right.
Of
there
this
was no,
like,
cute or interesting reactions for anyone. They just fucking sang a song in a monotone with no choreography and absolutely no whimsical things. And then the episode ground to a fucking climax was kind of acceptable. Let's just get to the feedback. No,
yeah, let's do
Juan
it.
Was
right.
Hilarious. The obvious discomfort she was feeling being forced, like, that stuff was super. You know what?
When
fuck
I'm
it.
Recapping, I'm going to say they sing
theme.
A song about this, and then you're free to talk about whatever you want to talk about within that song. Look, I'm here to recap. What
I
can I say
Lon
about
and
a song?
Ortega were really funny. If the people also enjoyed this episode, you know, yeah.
I like that. I like that part.
Oh, I like the intro. I think the acapella stuff they did was fun.
Was a bop. I really appreciated it. We stand in one. In fact, I was like, I already had a giant smile on my face, and when I realized that they're doing something fancy with the credits too, just like, I was in the tank.
Yeah. And they've done this before, you know, they did this on the animated episode.
Sure.
Seems like they like to change it up when they have a reason to. And that's good. All right, the crew meets to try to figure out what's happening. Spock thinks they're in an improbability field, which is creating alternate reality where people sing. And apparently they're opening it up like a zipper as they travel, so they decide to try and zip it back up. You got some Heisenberg compensators, some shield harmonics, and a deflector array. Oh, man. Oh,
that
man,
the
trifecta.
That is the techno-babble Yahtzee or bingo or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, they've lampshaded this. I don't know if I've never noticed this about Star Trek, or if it's something that's peculiar to this show, but this whole, like, if I can form an analogy about a subspace phenomenon, then it must work like the physical analogy. Like, looks like a zipper. I wonder if we could zip it up backwards. I'm like, why would you think that? Why would you? Yeah. First of all, it doesn't really look like a zipper. Looks like the Enterprise is a pizza cutter slicing the fabric of space and time. Can you back a pizza slicer up? I don't think so, Pella.
Just put more cheese on it.
Now you're rubbing off on me. I'm fucking starting to hate her too. But I like the ghost. I like Mbinga, this big tough guy who just belted out a song, and they're talking about we all sing. His line of like, and so did I, and I do not sing. I thought that was hilarious. Pike's coming like cold open of so that happened around the conference room. That I thought that was really funny.
Is that Mbinga stuff meta? Is it because the dude, let's call him Babs. That's what he's like credited as on IMDb, and I'm not going to pronounce his name because I'll get it wrong.
Baratunde Olasamankun.
Holy
is this man's
shit!
Name.
All right. I eventually learned how to say Mr. Echo's name from Lost, so I will learn your name, sir, but it's going to take a while.
We'll need 7 seasons of Star Trek. Any less than that, I can't guarantee it.
Anyway, I think this is meta because he only gets a couple of lines in this entire episode, and I don't know if that's just a happenstance of the plot. Like, we didn't have much to do with Mbinga because he got his big moments earlier in the season, or if that was a specific request from the man himself. Like, you've heard me speak, right? You expect me to sing? Fuck you.
It could be, I wonder. Because, like, I actually thought his line in the finale was one of the more kind of, like, joyful, fun things. Like, him skipping through to sickbay talking about...
I liked it when he sang.
And he had kind of, like, I don't know, like, the cool London kind of, singing.
Yeah.
Where there's a little accent to it, most
a little
people
dirty.
Yeah. A little like a little grimy. I found it most I thought that he should have gotten more lines.
Yeah, he might have requested not to. I don't know. I really love the line in this scene where Kirk says, "Mr. Spock, you explained that very well. I almost understood it." That's maybe the most Kirk thing I've ever heard him say. He's being very playful with Spock. You can start to see the seeds of their relationship from the original series.
Can you believe that we're getting this much James T. Kirk?
It's great. No problems.
Do you think that there's a way... Do you think this will get old? I feel like it's kind of genius to have the man's brother on the ship. So you've always got a reason to like, oh, why does he keep coming back to Enterprise? Blah, blah, blah. But he's a first officer now. If he shows up literally every other season next, I don't know how they're going to do that.
Yeah. I mean, it kind of made sense here. He's going to go train under one of the highest profile first officers in the fleet.
Again, I'm loving that they're getting away with this. And maybe if we all collectively agree that we like Jim Kirk enough on the Enterprise that we can just, will our suspension disbelief. But it is going to the whole plot point is like, I'm a rolling stone, baby. I can't pin me down any one spot unless it's the fucking bridge of the USS Enterprise. And that I'm inexplicably here way more than you would think. But
I think it's been more strained in previous episodes than it was here. So I'm hoping they can be creative with that and come up with more reasons to see him. Because, yeah, it's, I enjoy watching him.
They have a whole arc with his brother, Sam, that it looks like they're wanting to work through, too. That's, yep. Again, I'm not complaining. I just, I know that that's one of the, as much universal praise as getting among truck fans, I've seen some people be like, I don't know how they're going to keep, I don't find it plausible that Kirk is spending as much time with the crew as they, you know, and early goes the season, I'm like, okay, you're going to have a time travel episode where you can do some kind of, you know, mirror universe version of Kirk. That'll work. Mm-hmm. And then he just keeps coming back. Has he been in like 7 out of the 10 episodes?
A lot. And he was in a lot of the finale episode from last season, right?
He was indeed.
Yeah, it's been a good chunk of it. Like half of the episodes. Yeah, we'll see. See if they can keep it up. Anyway, we go over to Spock, who's trying to find the correct frequencies for the deflector beam that they're creating. He notices a log of Chapel's comms with Dr. Corby, and he asks her about it. She says she doesn't know anything about it because she doesn't read personal logs, but tells him that you should probably ask her about it. And he's like, we're not on... It's not that they're not on speaking terms. They're just not communicating very well right now.
I thought his, like, of course, that would be unethical. Like, I got the idea that if Uhura is, if it was going like, yeah, why don't we fight? He would not have reported that to the chain of command.
No. Nope. He would have read it.
Yeah, what do you think's gone wrong with Chapel and Spock? Just too much too soon? Like, Chapel thought it'd be hot, and then Spock's just a lot. Spock, yeah. It's a rebound.
She fetishized the Vulcan the Vulcan sex, and suddenly she got it, and she's like, been there, done that.
Yeah, yeah.
And now it's one of those things where, like, they were in their honeymoon period, right? Mm-hmm. And then they got out of that after one date, I guess. And now they kind of can't stand each other, or she can't stand him anyway. But she's got a lot to work through. I don't know. She's early in her career. That's a hilarious thing. We'll talk about it when we get there. But she's early in her career. She wants to do a lot of stuff, and this might hold her back.
Yeah, no, I agree. I don't. I just think it's. I was kind of taken aback at how schoolboy Spock has felt through all this. But
yeah,
I guess that makes sense. And he seems like he's very, like, small C conservative. You know, like, I think he believe. Like, I don't think he was prepared for as casual a relationship as what it's been.
Yeah,
you know, that he was like, right away, like, the next episode, immediately, like, what are we, should we report this to? We gotta be an official couple, you know. Mm-hmm. And she's kind of like, I thought we were JB just banging, you know. I'm curious to see what the next time T'Pring comes back, is he going to try to, like, rekindle things with her? Is he going to just, like, go on a full incel arc that he just, like, I just don't understand women. I broke up with my Vulcan fiance and I went with Nurse Chapel, and now she's off to, I don't know.
I mean, it seems like that might be headed that way with the song that he's singing this episode.
I know, it's very...
We'll see.
Yeah.
Red alert. Here comes an ad break. We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of Apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints. Except, it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited. It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live. Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday. Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
Madman and father of Mad Max, George Miller, is back with another apocalyptic tale from the Australian wastelands.
This time, we're getting a prequel featuring the origin story of Charlize Theron's character Furiosa, starring the Queen's Gambit's Anya Taylor-Joy in the title role and the mighty Thor Chris Hemsworth as the warlord Dr. Dementis. Furiosa promises more high-octane, slightly radioactive action and fun.
Furiosa drives into theaters on May 24th, and we'll have our spoiler-free thoughts and impressions of the film as well as a discussion of trailers and upcoming movies for everyone. But if you want to ride with us the full length of the podcast on the eternal highways of Valhalla, shiny and chrome, you're going to have to be a club member.
Join today at support.baldmove.com. Get our full discussion of Furiosa and many more first-run films, plus tons of other bonus podcasts and ad-free feeds.
Support.baldmove.com.
Let's boldly go back to the episode. Welcome back to Baldly Go. So Kirk and Una are making mods to the ship, and they break out into song and dance as they discuss her leadership style. Get another Gilbert and Sullivan reference, which is just sprinkled all across Star Trek, huh?
I like the Gilbert and Sullivan. I thought this was very much more Rogers, Hammerstein, Sherman Brothers style. Very Chim-Chim, Chiru. But it's cute. Like, I don't think... I don't think either of these people are the world's strongest singers. Rebecca Romijn or whoever the Jim Kirk is.
Yeah, they're serviceable. And
you can definitely tell
the
people they're trying to keep within an octave. Like Anson Mount, another one like that, versus the people that they give. Like Christina Chong, DeLon, they really let her fucking belt.
Yeah, she's very good. Uhura, they let her belt it out too in engineering there.
Yeah, she's that's good. Cecilia Rose Gooding. We got some feedback from people. The guy was predicting who would be good just by looking at their, you know, IMDb history, and like, oh, this person's got a theater background. This person's actually has a discography, But these guys not so much. But it's one of those very, you know, simple, and it is very, you know. People talking about command and how to do command better, and Una articulating that she used to be kind of like an island unto herself and pursuing her own truth, and connecting to that truth allowed her to connect better with her crew, because she didn't want to be that way. That's how she thought things had to be.
You also have to keep yourself at a certain amount of remove, I guess, from them. That's Picard style. He lets very few people in because, you know, he has to make those tough decisions. And
seems like she's trying to go more Riker now. She's trying to be a little bit more connected to the crew. And the other thing is La'an observing how casually they're singing about their feelings is the thing you're supposed to be noticing in the background, her going around. At first I'm like, is she jealous? But no, she's just terrified that she's going to get around Kirk and, you know.
She's jealous, but not that Kirk and Una are developing a relationship, but she's jealous that Una can express herself, right?
Yeah, she doesn't have to be terrified if she's going to confess to an illegal love. I guess that's the other thing, is like, this is pretty big Federation, you're not quite prime directive, but secondary, tertiary directive of like, don't fuck with the time flow.
Yeah.
By confessing your extra chronological relationship with a character.
Yeah. And she's going to sing a song about that. She's going to go back to her quarters and sing about how Una is so open and free, and she wishes she was more like that. And maybe she'll get there. Who knows?
Yeah, I think this is going to probably be called Flying Blind on the soundtrack. I thought this was really...
This was a decent song. Yeah.
This is strong.
This almost has a hook, and she's a good singer. So, yeah, I think this one was pretty decent.
Flying by, that's a pretty... I thought it's a pretty good hook. But, yeah. You know, she said, I thought the visuals were strong, like her rolling around in bed with this idealized Jim Kirk from another line, and her wondering if, like, this time could repeat or unravel. And there's a little bit of a Jesus take the wheel or subspace wave take the wheel because she just wants to let go.
Mm-hmm.
But she knows deep down she won't because she has no faith. And there's even a little non-determinism, talking about consent and freedom as concepts are not real.
Mm.
Like she's trying to, I feel like she's like withdrawing and intellectualizing her problem to avoid dealing with the emotions. I bet again.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Christina Chong does have a pretty strong theater and singing background, and you definitely tell they open up the music quite a bit. They open up the composition quite a bit because she's got the range for it and the power too.
Yeah, that's the thing. She's doing some fairly tricky singing here. It's not just, you know, we're gonna give you these notes and hit it. You got to transition between notes pretty seamlessly, and she hits that stuff really well.
Mm-hmm. It reminds me of like the Defying Gravity from the Wicked. It's got a lot of that kind of same feeling and musicality.
Huh. Haven't seen that one. So Lon then goes to Pike and says, you know, I think these songs might be an actual security threat because they express emotions. So experiments
ready to
go.
My personal emotional security anyway.
Yeah, but kind of a threat to the timeline too. She's got a point her particular situation. It's and a like, threat, and she's gonna, you know, make the point about why it's a threat to everybody here in a second.
Well, and even without the destruction of space time, like there's some species like Vulcans that this would be extremely traumatic, and like obviously the Klingons, this is some crazy shameful shit that's happening to them that they don't understand.
I do love that.
I think this is a very selfish motivation, but like she's not wrong. She's not wrong.
Right. So the experiment's ready to go. They fire it up. Seems to be working. Unfortunately, they didn't actually zip the subspace fold up. In fact, the singing has spread to Battelle's ship, and she gets on comms here, and her and Pike sing a song about their frustrations with each other for a bit before Lon cuts that transmission. And Spock tells Pike that the improbability field has expanded to the entire fleet, or I guess at least 12 ships so far.
Yeah, I thought this was cool that they did a reprise of the most unusual, so peculiar, like intro song, and then smoothly kind of blended into this private conversation. You know, kind of like a slinky, conspiratorial bop. And again, the visual of Laan kind of like seeing this back and forth, and just you can see her in the background storming across the bridge to like slam the disconnect button on her as console. That made me laugh out loud.
And I like the moment that she slams it, where Pike has just like fallen to his knees. He's about to belt it all out, and then she cuts it abruptly, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Pretty good.
It's good. And you can tell, like, I think Anson Mount says his range not nearly as good as Christina Chong's, because it's very, both of these guys are very, this is roughly the range I possess that they're singing in, which is not great. I don't even have a full octave. It's like 4.5 notes.
Jeez.
4 notes and a semitone. That's what I got.
Well, you know, none of these people signed up to be on a musical, so I don't hold it against them.
Yeah. I cannot get enough of Spock scowling into his science hood. I miss that so much in the old series. Spock just looking at that thing and the shit flashing on his face, and
green glow every time, or whatever.
Every time Peck goes and stares into that, I'm like, oh god, it's so cool.
Mm-hmm.
I need a science hood. I'd trade all 5 of these monitors for 1 science hood.
Sure, watch the episode through a science hood. Apple's releasing a science hood pretty soon, right?
Yeah, it'll be $10,000, and it has proprietary dongle.
Oh, yeah. You don't know where you stick the dongle. Don't want to know. You know what I like is the Kirks measuring their dicks. This is a lot of fun. The shame of this episode is that Sam Kirk doesn't get a song. I wanted to see him sing.
These brothers are just locked in a never-ending Kirk-off, and I don't know. Like, it's entertaining, these brothers kind of, like, squabbling, and the fact that Kirk, you know, James is, like, surpassing Sam, but I wonder what they're going with it, because this is, like, the third episode this season where Sam is just kind of disgusted that Kirk is outdoing him. And Kirk is completely unapologetic about it, too.
Yeah, why would he apologize for being ambitious?
It's like, get good, rookie. Yeah. Like, stop fucking with the science shit and put on the gold shirt and command.
Or don't, and just get over it. Although Kirk's kind of shitty about him. You know, he keeps saying, oh, you're supposed to be in zoology. You have no business being on an actual experiment. What?
Yeah.
Fuck you, man.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm trying not to take a side, but I agree that this guy who was the first Kirk that we were introduced in Strange New World seems to be, I mean, no, it's not even close. James T. Kirk has been on this show more than Sam Kirk, who works on the ship.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Screen time, certainly. What do we know about Sam Kirk in the original series? Is he alive?
I have no idea. I have no knowledge.
Okay. I don't even know if the original series mentions him ever, because I've not seen it, but
I'd be surprised, because every single time I think the show has truly invented a new character, it feels like, oh, actually, that was from that one, or this show is very good about picking through the canon and finding little undigested nuggets.
Mm-hmm. So let's move over to Uhura having a theory about the reality they're in. Maybe it follows the rules of musicals, namely irrational thinking, potential to drive them apart and express their deepest emotions. Captain Pike wants to blow up the space fold. The way he says, I think we should blow it up, and the look on his face is brilliant. It's Anson Mount's. That is the thing he's good at.
His comic timing, man. And it comes right on the heels of the private conversation where, like, the subtext of this whole scene is he's doing a ready room presentation with his crew, who's all seen him humiliated on his hands and on his knees beseeching
and he's
his girlfriend.
Saying, we've got to solve this.
Yeah. We need to blow. Yeah. I think we should blow it up. Like, it's remarkably like the Klingons, because that's their reaction, too. Like, we're coming across the neutral zone. We're blowing this shit up. You stay the fuck out of our way. We're not talking about this. And Spock concurs, because he's unnerved by this stuff too.
And at least they're doing a test first, right? Like, that's the thing Spock brings to the table, is let's not go all rogue, you know, cowboy here. Let's do a test first, and it's a good thing they do. Lon comes up with the idea to transport some subatomic particles, I guess, out of the fold and try and blow them up. Mm-hmm. And gets assigned to do some cross-targeting with Kirk. A little cross-targeting. Never hurt anybody.
Can I ask you something?
Yeah.
Why are they making a point to have Jim Kirk step on Laan's toes this entire episode? Like, in kind of like almost a chauvinistic way. He apologized for it all the time, but he's like, you know, she has this thought, and he, like, completes it. And so, a lot of times on Star Trek, they'll use that, you know, as a way to show characters are simpatico. They're like, but, you know, like Beverly will be like, I think we should isolate the growth factor. And Geordi's like, in the positronic matrix to do. And it's like, but this, it's like he did that. And it's like, oh, you're like stealing Laan's thunder.
Uh-huh.
And then later in a scene, he starts to command one of her crew members. And is that just like, you're trying to show why he needs more seasoning as a commander, or why? Because it seems like it annoys the piss out of Laan, but she also still is super in love with this guy. I didn't quite get what they were getting with that.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't know if it's like showing that he's kind of worming his way into this crew in a weird way, like,
or maybe it's like he's coming up with excuses to work with her to indicate that he is as in, like, to tell us he's as into her as she is into him without the subspace connection, or without the time travel connection. Because I almost thought they're like, are they going to do like some kind of like, would you cool your fucking man jets for a bit, but mm-hmm. no, they never got there. So I wasn't quite sure what they're going for.
Yeah, I don't feel like that's really an integral part of Kirk's personality. So maybe it's something he moves beyond by the time of the original series.
But I think that, yeah. like, I think it's, as Kirk as depicted in the original series, is pretty sexist and chauvinist. Like, he's good for the times, but, like, sure, Zap Brannigan sure. from Futurama is based on Kirk, and uh-huh. a big part of his personality is he's just, like, terrible with women.
Yeah, yeah, but the interrupting thing is, like, specifically what I was thinking about, you know? Like, he's not really known for talking over his crew. He's kind of known for listening to them and taking their advice, right?
Yeah. Yeah, by and large.
Yeah. So, I don't know, maybe it's just, you know, showing how rough this young Kirk is. Lessons he needs to learn. So, Lon tells Una she can't take the assignment because she's afraid to sing to Kirk due to the space-time implications. And Una, via song, tells her that she regrets keeping her own secrets, so you probably shouldn't do that.
Yeah, this is the secrets you keep. That's what they're probably going to call this. And there's like a montage of everybody else thinking about the secrets they're keeping. Spock and Chapel, they got Pike and Batal. I like the part where Una turns off the gravity and they kind of dance around in the air. And she's, you know, this the whole point of this is like, look, I understand we both developed survival skills from the way we grew up, where we put ourselves on an island of one so no one can hurt you or hurt us or let us down. And I perfected this skill and it helped me survive and it worked before, but it doesn't serve me anymore. Yeah, it's good mm-hmm. stuff. I like it.
Okay.
That just because, you know, like these maladaptive coping mechanisms we come up with as kids and young adults, sometimes they're the things that hold us back sure. to succeed in life. And Lon needs to hear that. And also, it's nice to see Una kind of branch out from where she was, too. Like I said, I was impressed that they channeled so many cult, like, season-long character arcs into this musical episode.
Yeah, they're doing a lot of character work in these songs. And hopefully you can, you know, follow them. Taking notes, I definitely had to rewind a bunch because I missed lyrics. And I was like, oh, what are they trying to say with this song? Mm. But I imagine just kind of watching it, you pick up a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
So then Lon and Kirk cross-target their subatomic particles and send them to Spock for his experiment. Kirk says they should team up more often, and Lon starts to tell him how she feels, but Spock blows up the particles, nearly destroying engineering and interrupting their moment.
Soak like soaking subspace in kerosene and putting a match to it.
Yeah, she breaks some rules here. You know, I'm almost surprised that like the temporal cops don't show up right then and there and like slap the words out of her mouth because they know she's about to do this because she does it.
That's like so. That's your the temporal police did a little. Did a little bit of
they're fucking with it all
pulling
the time.
On this and pushing on that and kaboom.
Oh no, I just think they should have shown up and said, you're about to do here. Don't fucking do it. We're gonna arrest you.
It is kind of funny how off the leash she is for mm-hmm. you know, like this is clearly a organization that could closely monitor her, you know. But maybe also they just know how things are gonna happen. So like as long as she's not on the track of them getting together. But yeah. No, her just revealing that this information probably is something to corrupt the timeline. Yeah.
You would think so. I mean, they told her not to tell anybody about it. And here she is telling. And Kirk himself is like, you're about to make a huge, faux pas here. Break some big rules. Are you sure you want to do this? And she says, yep, I'm doing it.
Well, you know what I say. They make a real cute couple, so fuck the time, please.
Sure. Yeah.
Ship those characters. Lurk. I'm a lurker. I'm a big lurker.
Yeah.
Shipping Lon and Kirk.
I'm with you. I like him. I like him. I mean, we obviously know that doesn't really go anywhere, but temporarily it could.
I'm trying to think if there's any other combination of that, because you like, I don't know what you do with Noonien and Singh.
Kaan. I like Kaan.
Kaan? Oh, that's a good one. Jim, you've totally redeemed yourself.
Yeah. I hate musicals, but I like puns.
Yeah, all right, all right, all right. We can see eye to eye on that one.
So Spock says blowing up the improbability field would destroy everyone affected by it. So that's out. They get a message from a Klingon ship, which has already been affected, and they are coming to destroy the fold. We've located the abominable source of our dishonor.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. The description of expression of emotion via song as dishonor is so good.
I do love it. And because the whole episode, I'm wondering, like, oh, my God, what is, because I thought they were going to go with him coming in doing the opera, right?
Oh, of course.
You always hear about
yeah.
Klingon opera, right? And, you know, Worf's always listening to Klingon opera. It's ear splitting. It's like they're mm-hmm. going to do something funny with that. I did not see Backstreet Boys coming.
Really?
And also, hey, there's this kind of like, you know, because like Pike's getting a hail from the Klingons, and he's like, I can't take the risk of singing. So like, just like put him, you know, just hang up on him, and that's like feeds into the Klingons' paranoia. It's like your evasion just makes us suspect you all the more. So like him trying to avoid mm-hmm. trouble has gotten them into more trouble. I thought that was a nice little thing too. And he also tells Uhura that everything's riding on them and Spock. You guys got to find a different tempo. Another cute music metaphor that they're mixing in here.
Yeah. And then warning us, the last thing anyone wants to see is singing Klingons. I think you're dead wrong about that. That was the thing I most wanted to see.
What?
I forget who says it. Says the last thing anybody wants to see is singing Klingons. Wrong.
I thought you said I said that. I'm like, no, I just was wanting to see like opera maybe, but
yeah,
I definitely wanted
the
to see
episode. They said it in the episode. What the hell?
That makes sense. It's pretty prejudiced.
Tongue in cheek, right?
Yeah. No, and also like, they have a deep-seated prejudice against Klingons.
Oh yeah, I guess this crew, the Federation would at this time. Yeah.
Or Tega in particular.
Uh-huh.
It's like the ones that the real Klingon haters on board are Tega and Benga and Chapel. Those are the ones we know are veterans of the Klingon War, and they just like fucking hate them on sight.
Mm-hmm. So Pike's crew meets about what to do about the Klingon situation, because they're coming to destroy the fold, and thereby everyone who's ever had contact with it, right? Like, I think that's the thing, is we learn that if you're affected by it and you blow it up, it will blow you up too.
Mm. And spread through almost the entire Federation and clear through the Klingons. Right. It'd be bad.
Yeah, so they don't want him to blow it up. Lon gets assigned to come up with a strategy to take out the Klingon weapon systems before they can fire on the fold, and she has Kirk help her, and then Spock and Uhura are assigned to try shutting down the fold before the Klingons arrive. Two-prong attack on this thing, which is nice. Smart. This is dangerous, you know? Kirk and Lon going off together again. She knows what she's doing. It's not good.
Multiple threats to the galaxy here. Lon mm-hmm. destroying the timeline. Spock and Uhura destroying subspace.
Mm-hmm.
Everything's standing on a knife edge.
So Spock suggests they study the songs for patterns that can, I guess, break down the improbability field, cancel it out. Spock triggers a song by speaking with Chapel, who's celebrating her acceptance to the Fellowship. She explains via song how important it is to her, and I guess breaks up with him. I wasn't really getting the breakup part of this, but later in the episode, he's like, yeah, we're broken up or whatever. And Uhura scans the song for patterns the whole time.
Yeah, the one of the last stanzas of the song, this I'm ready song, is if I need to leave you, I won't fight it. And Spock's is kind of observing, like
but
it feels
if,
like
if, right? That very much felt like a, if we can't work this out, I'm still going to do it and we'll break up.
I know,
but
then
like,
Spock later on, describes it as like, I heard the definitive end to our arrangement. So I felt like this is another missed communication that Chapel's we're taking a break, you know, break.
a brake spock, how those work, and his thought is like Chapel, as soon as she gets out of a port galley, she sprints to the arms of the first available midshipman and jumps his bones, because that's what he would do, right?
Right. He just maybe can't take that, a second break, right? I'm already on break. I can't do another break.
Yeah, Spock just really seems really traditional and old-fashioned and kind of inexperienced, and Chapel seems like she's pretty worldly and carefree and experimentive, and she's got the throes of this major success, and she really wants to see how far she can go, and does she really want some lieutenant on a starship holding her down?
This news
changes everything. But I don't know why she didn't tell Spock. That's where it's like, I feel like they're painting Porner's Chapel to be, you know, like a girl ghosting Spock on fucking Bumble or something. The way they're writing her is like intentionally like hurtful or dismissive. Like, I don't know. Like, why wouldn't she tell Spock? Why would you want Spock to find out, I don't know, what, on the day you get your transfer order? Or are you just not going to tell him at all? He's going to leave the ship? And
yeah, it's a hard conversation for her to have. I can understand why she would be reluctant to have it, but it needs to be had, and she knows that.
Yeah, and like I said before, it's like a lot of the relationships on Star Trek do tend to be pretty YA, but like I rationalize that by thinking, again, I actually unironically learned a lot about relationships and how things work by watching Star Trek, and I'm not going to begrudge kids nowadays, because yeah, this all feels extremely juvenile in high school.
Yep.
But I can't say anything better about like all of Geordi's misadventures in Star Trek: The Next Generation.
Leah Brahms, shit.
Oh my god! And not so just cringe. That, like, you remember how that try hard he was, like on that one holiday where he's got like dudes violining on the beach, and he's got the weather just perfect, and he can't even pay attention to what she's, because he's just fucking Geordi, man, get together.
You got to be more like Sisko. Sisko was a smooth operator. Sisko knew what was up. His beach scene was much better.
His job is beach.
Here's a hilarious thing to me about this song and this scene, I guess.
This is the one you like. This is one amongst my least favorite, and it's one of your favorites.
Not a huge fan of the song. I think the choreography is better than anything else they do in this episode aside from the grand finale. The thing that's hilarious about this song is she's singing about like this fellowship. It's going to open all these doors, this limitless possibilities she now has ahead of her, and how she can't be dragged down by commitments that she has here on the ship. Tell me what role Nurse Chapel plays in the original series. Where is she? What is she doing?
She's a sick bay. She's a nurse.
You don't see anything weird about that? Kicking open all these doors to infinite possibilities, going off exploring the galaxy, and boom, here she is back on the Enterprise. She's just 3 months in, she's going to be like, yeah, I did that thing, and now I'm just the nurse on the Enterprise again, right?
I mean, it is a very
with
prestigious
Spock
post.
Alongside him, she couldn't,
but
like, all of this is
right.
Much ado about nothing, is my point.
Yeah, no, you're right. That's the other thing, is like, we know because the rough shape things are in the old series that some of this stuff is just not going to go anywhere.
Namely Nurse Chapel, not going anywhere. She's going away for 3 months. She's going to be right back here.
But they always had sexual tension. They wrote sexual tension between Nurse Chapel and Spock. And Spock was always written as kind of like aloof and above it. And I do wonder, like, I would love to rewatch the old series between this season two and season three, because I feel like some of those interactions will have a whole new meaning. I hope that they've written this stuff with the knowledge of how things end up in Star Trek, the old series.
They have to have, right?
Has to. Yeah, if you're watching like Chapel and Spock in the old series, you're like, what the fuck? But if it's like, oh my God, those people fucked like 5 years ago, and this makes so much more sense, this interaction. That's what I'm hoping. And I kind of feel like I'll be rewarded for that hope and faith, because they do seem like they pay attention to that kind of stuff in the show.
That's great for the love life. I think for Chapel's sake, they need to have this be an arc where she decides that she doesn't want to go off and explore those limitless possibilities, right? She decides, oh, this is where I belong. I belong on the Enterprise. We can explore this way exploring the galaxy on this ship is the right choice for me, and I'm going to be the nurse here.
Yeah, like, because
otherwise it's pathetic. It's sad, right? Like, she goes out, tries to explore, and then falls back to her old position. That's
right. Like, if it turns out the archaeo medicine is like boring, you spend so much time in a classroom, and you're always just writing grants, and it's just not. Whereas you're exploring when you're, you know, I can do that. That would make a lot, and that's a rational decision. Like, this is better for my career, but it's like less fun, or it's less hands on, or I don't like. But you're right. If it's like she has all these ambitions to see what all I can be, and you know, it's my dream. It feels good. I've worked so hard. There's endless possibilities, and then she's just
the nurse on the Enterprise.
Still the nurse on the Enterprise.
Yeah, that would be sad.
Yeah. Yeah, they'll have to. They got some tricky things that are going to have to. They're going to have to the maneuver, for sure.
Mm-hmm. So let's go over to Lon and Kirk as they plan their attack strategy, take out the Klingons' weapon systems. Lon tells Kirk about their out of time encounter and how much it meant to her, but not via song. She wants to get this out before she starts singing. She also says that, Kirk says he sees her the same way the other Kirk did. No, she tells him, this is confusing, that he sees her the same way, because he doesn't know that other Kirk. And this Kirk says, yeah, I feel a connection too, but I'm in a relationship with a pregnant woman named Carol, so I don't know if this is going to work out.
When he said Carol, and I was watching this for the first time, I screamed. Uh-huh. Because I had completely forgotten that Kirk has a fucking son. Uh-huh. And my next thought is like, oh my God, are they changing canon? Because I thought that Kirk didn't know about David Marcus.
Yeah.
But it turns out this has been a longstanding debate among Star Trek fans, because if you look at like their actual dialogue and the things they say, it's very ambiguous about if he knew, when he knew, and how much he knew.
Because about the Rathacon, like, right?
Yeah, Rathacon. Because when the first time Kirk sees David, he recognizes him in sight and says to Carol, "Is this David?" Mm-hmm. But does that mean that he knew that she had a son, or that he knew he had that?
Or that it was his son? Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Because the other thing is, like, David talks about Kirk like he doesn't know anything about him, and certainly doesn't know that he's his father. And some of the things that Kirk says, like, could be taken as like, why didn't you tell me like that I was a father, or why didn't you tell me that you were having problems? There's a lot of ambiguous statements. So like, one of the prime directives of this show seems to be to smooth over things that have been ambiguous canonically, and to kind of like fill in some of those stories ourselves. And in this version, Kirk, I think it's like by her request. Like, she always said, like, look, you and I moved in separate worlds. I don't want my boy to grow up in yours. It's dangerous. I want him to be... It turns out the world is going to be taken over by a psychopath that's going to string us all up like fucking game meat. But yeah. But yeah. That's long odds against those bets, and she lost it. But I was so... Yeah, like, because I was so... oh my God, this is happening. They're going to... He's feeling the connection too, and like... And then he's like, oh, I've got this on again, off again with this woman named Carol, and she's pregnant. And I'm like, what are...
Yeah. Wild. There's also a reference to the Katinga class Klingon ship that you need to be wary of its aft torpedoes. I didn't know if this was a direct reference to some encounter that Kirk has had with the Klingons. It's got to be, right? Like, there has to be something where Kirk has, you know, been surprised by an aft torpedo. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or been extra cautious about it. And this is like her warning him. And so in the future, he'll remember that or something.
Yeah, I wonder. There are some deep cuts on the show that definitely stretch my, especially since, you know, we're recording this in advance and you don't have the...
The research
hindsight
machine.
The Reddit and the research machine is as easy to use. But yeah, I was super excited. And I also, like, I loved, like, DeLon's, like, 5 seconds, like, deer in a headlight. And she's just like, wow, you know, like that is not at all.
That's a lot to take in, right?
She was prepared for like, well, I don't feel it, or, you know, but like, oh, I feel it, but I have this girl who I got pregnant and it's a whole thing, baby, you know. My life is complicated.
She should have, her response should have been, yeah, well, I just broke the timeline to tell you.
True.
So come on, man, you can ditch a pregnant lady named Carol. We can
also
make this
what
happen.
A dog. He's got an on again off again girlfriend that he is uncomfortable like, you know, but he's still putting out invitations to get drinks on Starbase.
Yep.
What a hell. Dog.
James T. Kirk, ladies and gentlemen.
The operation, the sheer scale of this operation.
It feels a little strange, and it's going to feel strange in this moment, right? Because this is the ultimate parasocial relationship. She's had intimate experiences with him. They meant so much to her, and she's trying to explain what they mean to this man who doesn't know her, doesn't have, you know, he might have feelings for her, but not the intimate closeness that she feels to this other Kirk. I felt so bad for her having to try and explain this, you know?
Yeah, and it was so it's like, but I'm glad that she learned the lesson, which is like, that wasn't so bad, rather than I took a chance and it bit me in the ass and I'm just going to go right back into my shell again. It's more of like, well, I did that and the worst thing happened. You know what? It wasn't that bad. So that's exciting for her personal development.
I mean, the worst that happened here is she was right back in the situation she was in before, right? Where she has this unrequited love.
Did you think Paul Wesley did a really good job of channeling Bill Shatner in this scene? Like, there's this one part where he kind of scrunches his face up when he's like steps in and regards, you know, trying to think exactly what he wants to say to her, where I'm like, holy fuck, this guy is full on channeling the Shat.
Yeah, I didn't notice it in this scene, but I think he's doing a great job. I don't know. He looks a little bit like Shatner, roughly, but not. He's certainly not a Shatner impersonator, right? But
I feel like Chris Pine's the same way, where I don't think he's very Bill Shatner shaped, but he does the character well. Where I think he's got much more of a, you know, he does have that facial resemblance. It's passing. Hair's not the same, but there's something about the jaw and the eyes and that kind of does it for me, especially when he's trying to give good Shatner, I think.
Yeah. When he gives a shat.
When he gives a shat, it really comes together.
Spock is looking for patterns in the song, but according to him, there isn't one. Or maybe he's just distracted by the sudden end of he and Chapel's relationship. I don't know. Either way, he breaks out into song about how distraught he is and then runs off, which triggers Uhura to sing a song about how alone she feels. And she manages to have a breakthrough during that song, find a pattern.
Spock's solo "I'm the X," which is a downbeat reprise of "I'm Ready." It's just a slower, minor key version of what Chapel is singing in Port Galley. Mm-hmm. I liked it. I thought the dual meaning of "I'm the X," which is I'm the ex boyfriend, but I'm also like this unsolvable variable in my own personal equation that never balances because I got the emotions and, you know, and he's misinterpreting everything. Like, she sees this happy and carefree, and he's like feels like he's burdened by all these things, and you know, he blames. I think they're doing another good job of showing how Spock arrives in shape at the old series. Like, you know, we're talking about how he was taking all these chances and trying to be a little bit more emotional and get in touch with his human side. And he, unlike La'an, has been burnt by this, and he's running screaming back to the box of rationality. He's like, this is all my fault. This, I've set aside my entire core philosophy, half of my heritage for her, and look what happened.
Got rejected.
I'm so dysfunctional, weak and emotional. I thought it's good. That's a better version than the "I'm Ready."
Yeah, I agree. This is probably my favorite song in the whole episode, actually.
Interesting.
Yeah, I mean, the grand finale is fun, but it's not.
But I thought that her is the "Keep Us Connected" song, where it's like, it's just saying where she's singing about her family and how she was happy, but she lost everything, and she's wondering, like, why, everywhere I go, why am I so alone? And is this the, am I the, is this how I'm the best, like being on my own and realizing that she's a person, like there's a, that lyric of I'm woven of both love and loss, you know, and she's found her place as a person that can make other people feel connected and inspired. I bought it.
Thematically, I think the song works. I think the beginning of the song is just bonkers, where she's singing about her family blowing up in a shuttle. It's an entirely too upbeat song. Compared to Spock's downbeat stuff that he's doing, and this song coming in right after it, it's like, well, this is a little more, you know, upbeat than I think it should be, with her singing about her family burning alive and shattering into millions of shards of light.
I don't know if that's exactly what she's singing about, but yeah, no, I get your meaning.
Yeah, I mean, it's the setup for the rest of it.
This is I forget what they call it, the bridge. This is like, you had this downbeat song of Spock, and hers starts kind of like downbeat and wistful and mournful, but then she grows and increases in confidence and strength, and then that leads to that. Then emotionally, you've had a couple of kind of like down songs in a row, and
then
emotionally
she's gonna be challenged to. Go,
yeah, yeah. This high point of the I'm ready, and then Spock throws a fit, and then La'an, you know, has this oh my god wow moment, and then Spock has his emo moment, and they turn this around into the finale, and it's is definitely a pivot point into the third act. And she's like clearly
classic. Sorry,
no, I was going to say just clearly, Cecilia is one of the better singers on the show, if not the best one, and.
She is.
I think she carries it pretty well.
Yeah. There's one point in the song where she really just goes for it, and I was like, "All right, that was well done." The camera work in this song is non-existent, though. Like, it's literally just like, let's move the camera back and forth. And there's one like light show kind of thing that they do for a half second where she's in sort of an orb of light. And language floating around her, communications floating around her, but that dissipates, and then they just do nothing with it. Same with Spock. I mean, Spock's, you know.
In an equivalent stage play or musical, this would be Inky Black stage spotlight, you know, like really mournful things. It's you don't usually get your big choreographed moments. You don't get the big dance numbers, you know.
I mean, I saw Hamilton.
Because you just had, like I said, we're bridging.
There is done well, but
we're bridging. I'm ready, which was like this big fucking show club number, and then we're about to go into the crew of the Enterprise finale. So,
yeah,
it was a little low energy, sure,
but I get it, Spock. You know, two relationships down the tubes in a few days. I'd probably that turned me off of love as well for a little while.
Stop trying to rebound, man. Yeah. Just stop. You can't do it.
So Uhura takes the pattern she found to Pike. Apparently, she thinks if they can get everyone singing at the same time, they can cause a spike in the fold that will close it. But they need to inspire everyone all at once. And Pike puts Uhura in charge of that. So Pike gets on the intercom and he tells the crew, we'll get through this by following Uhura's lead. So she introduces herself and starts a song about how awesome the crew of the Enterprise is, and everyone starts joining in. And the levels spike as the Klingons begin to approach, and, you know, the whole grand finale happens. There's a lot of song and dance, literally, that happens here. It spikes the levels appropriately, and the fold closes.
Yeah, this is climax of the episode. I think it feels that way. I like the setup where, like, the one thing that Pike is good at is making his crew feel confident that they can do the job set before them. And he gives Uhura this pep talk. You know, she's like, I don't know how you could possibly inspire. It's like, oh, you're already doing it. Such a great job. And that, you know, her talking about like the probabilities, because they're, you know, it's going back to why we're doing this, like this crazy probability things happening, and the probability of all of us being together at any one time is uncalculable, but here we are. And And I don't know. I just like going around seeing the dance, the red shirts. It's a simple thing, but they're all just kind of going about their deal, and then the camera spins, and now they're all dancing in formation. Mm-hmm. Kirk thanking the crew for the lessons he's learned for them. This Pike's whole line of like, the Starship Enterprise feels so electrified. I'm so proud to be your cap. I thought that was really funny because, again, he's not a great singer. And they gave him a line. So it's a little awkward phrasing, but I think they pull it off. And
Vega gets a line here at the end. He kind of bookends the episode.
Yeah, and this the way he's kind of like skipping through, and he's singing in his clearly accented singing voice, and it's just really cute. Just skipping through sick bay.
Just imagine how much it must have taken out of him, because this is a man that exclusively whispers, right? I don't think I've ever actually heard him speak. I think I've only heard him whisper.
Yeah, like even in Dune, like that's his whole deal. He's whispering to Paul in his dreams and, you know, hissing hissing insults and challenges. And
so for him to belt out a lyric here must have taken a lot out of him. I don't know if we'll see him in the finale. He might have sat out the next episode because of the recovery time.
Death threats are nothing new to us. It takes monumental faith and trust. Like I said, there's a couple of shaky lyrics in this one, but I think it mostly works because they sell it with a bunch of heart.
And I guess it's one of the reasons I don't really like musicals very much, is because it always feels like a stretch. Like, all the lyrics feel like a stretch, unless... unless you're talking about like the highest tier musicals, right? Like the greatest of all times. And then you get to places where I'm like, oh, this is actually really good music and incredibly complex and well-crafted lyrics. If you're like kind of like doing something for a one-off episode of Star Trek, you're not going to hit those highs, right?
Speaking of hitting highs, so they're building up and they're getting close to that 344 gigawatts of electron voltage subspace frequency, and Pike's excited, so he's like, we need more voices. She's like, you know, we're almost there, we need more voices. So he's like, hail the Klingons. Come on, you at least like that, right? The Klingons doing the B-boys,
it's funny. I know you're familiar with this. It struck me as like epic rap battles kind of stuff, which is funny.
Is that supposed
in the
to be
moment
a bad
I just don't
comparison?
Think the rapping in epic rap battles is very good,
huh?
Like, the thing about epic rap battles that is good is how they are able to craft the lyrics, you know, based on the character that's rapping and the insults, right?
Yeah,
but here you're not really doing that part of it, and so like the epic rap battle style doesn't really do it for me. That's not what I go to epic rap battles for.
Yeah, I don't know if that's a hot take, because like I've never stayed like,
maybe it's,
you know,
not
like a Kendrick Lamar, but I always thought the epic rap battle guys did. I mean, they're like nerdy white guys, but they're kind of like the Lonely Island boys, where it's like it's not.
Yeah.
There's this old this like saying that it's not that the dancing bear dances so well that's impressive. It's that it dances at all.
Yeah.
You know, it's like not that the nerdy white kids rap exceptionally well. It's just that they rap at all.
Yeah, for sure.
It's also Klingons. I think that's part of the joke, is that they are being influenced by some kind of crazy human phenomenon filtered through the subspace thing. They don't like. I don't get the idea that the Klingons like even understand this as like music. This is just something that's this bizarre thing that's happening to them.
Yeah,
and the choreography,
causing them great dishonor. Yeah. The stuff's good.
And how their armor's kind of like bling, you know, looks very fancy and blinged, and like a stage costume, and the way their bridge is all done, like the
light show kind of.
Yeah, with like a little, it's like a carbon freezing chamber on Bespin. It's got a little bit of fog on it, so it's got that stage and. Just I had no idea what to expect when they came on the screen. I was thinking opera, but and then
no,
the Enterprise
they did it better than, because opera would have been funny because of its context within Star Trek, but not as funny as what they did.
and such an extreme style, you know, mashup. But this already was like, you know, they hadn't done anything. It's kind of like hip hop and R&B, and they pulled it off. And you got the Enterprise belleting with the three Klingon battle cruisers, and I just really like the build up to the "we're the unbreakable, unshakable, improbable, unstoppable, sensational, ovational, boldly explorational crew of the Enterprise." Mm-hmm. And then the fireworks that went off when they finally shattered the subspace rift. I thought that was just...
And then ended all with the classic Star Trek theme. That just kind of plays in full at the end, right?
What a fucking nice touch. The old Desilu theme.
Mm-hmm.
Just straight up. It's perfect. Perfect.
Yeah. No, they really pull out all the stops for this final number. And I think it works. Like I said, it felt like they were saving up for this big finale, and they hit that. But it's not the end of the episode. There are a couple more scenes here. Lon tells Una how it went when she confessed her feelings to Kirk. She's not happy about that, but it's a start to opening up, so it's not all bad.
Yeah, maybe I can be the person who takes chances more often. Good for you, Lon. Before the previous scene, they had a couple of reactions of everybody kind of like processing. I noticed that they made sure that Spock and Christina still frosty.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he walks by. He kind of gives her the... That's the thing. He's his old worst enemy in this scene, right?
Yeah.
Because, like, she's not sure she wants to break up with him. She's just like, well, if we need to break up or if we need to not be a thing for a while, that's what I'm going to do. And Spock's like, fuck you.
Yeah, he's just being stupid. I don't know what to say.
He basically, like, checks her into the boards here as he walks by, right?
Yeah, but he's like... He's kind of like, well, I'm going back to being emotionally repressed Spock, and she's made her decision, and I don't want to interfere with her. I don't want to be sad and mope. But yeah, like, she interprets it as being emotionally checked into the backboards.
Yeah.
So that's not good. I also really like the Anson Mount and Carol Kane doing their little... They dance a little, and I'm convinced that that was improv. That this is just like a candid moment that they got of them fucking around. Because also just like, I don't know, the look on Carol Kang's face is just like Anson Mount works on everybody.
I missed it entirely.
Yeah. Damn. Well, that's what happens when you get so busy hating on a perfectly innocent musical episode of Star Trek that you miss the forest for the trees.
Yeah, apparently.
Okay, so I just want to just acknowledge that they had the Spock and Christine whole thing. Talk about Lon. Now we got to deal with Pike and Batal.
Yep, he's cooking a meal for her as they talk about the song that they sang earlier on the bridge. She's not upset that he doesn't want to go to the same place for vacation. She's disappointed that he lied to her about it. She can't go on vacation, it turns out, because she got assigned a high priority mission, but she says they'll go somewhere when she gets back. Yeah, how long is she going to try to make this a thing with Pike when he keeps stumbling?
Well, I just wonder if there's some kind of this priority one mission. You know, that seems like very important. I wonder if this is going to be something that takes her out of the picture for a long time, maybe permanently.
Could be.
She doesn't tell him what it is.
Mm-mm.
It's just a priority one mission. And they have this, like, you know, there's also this kind of like, we'll have more time to plan. And like, I think that he makes a funny face, like, you know, will we? You know, because he knows that there's a clock on this whole thing.
Yeah.
And I don't know. This seems like these guys are just moving apart. They're two ships that pass in the night, and they're still trying to keep that connection going. And the sea is dark and getting wider between them, you know?
You would think he'd be more concerned with banging than he is. There's a man who's about to have his body so disfigured that he can't get out of a fully enclosed wheelchair thing.
Yeah, dude.
You got to get it in while you can, man.
Yeah, yeah.
Your time is limited here. Come on.
You're going to be blinking once for yes, two for no for the rest of your life.
Yeah, jeez. All right. Then we get the final scene here where Uhura gives her a log supplemental. All Federation vessels are behaving normally. Spock smoothed things over with the Klingons, and it's back to business as usual. And Uhura, sitting at her console, starts singing. Everyone kind of stares over at her, but it's just a song stuck in her head, not another subspace fold.
Yeah, the bloodwine diplomacy, and just as she says that, you see Spock stagger off the the turbo lift, and then he gets together. But when, the way he sits at his console is like, yeah, I know what it's like to be that heavy.
Yep. There's no morning after shot for bloodwine.
No.
Just saying.
Yeah, there's no plan B for that. You just got to deal with it. No, not enough. There's not enough hair on any number of dogs to take care of that.
Mm-hmm.
Shields up. Here come the ads.
We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R. R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, a very special isn't your speed. We've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd. At ease, Ensigns. Welcome back to Bald to Go.
And that's
okay.
It.
We've taken a long time to break this episode. We have a decent amount of feedback. I think we should get right into it.
Let's do it.
StarTrek@baldmove.com is how you send in feedback. First up is Brian K. says, I love your work and perspectives. You said you didn't realize why the Mariner idolizes Uhura, but in the old series, Uhura is the only black character and the only woman on the bridge. Uhura is the epitome of competence and is frequently the person who makes first contact with any ships or planets the Enterprise encounters. Of course Mariner is going to admire that. I may be overgeneralizing as a Gen Xer and apologize for any ignorance, but it seems that the Lower Decks, which I do not watch, is about a group of millennials, and they seem to be more about representation than other groups.
Yeah, of course. You're right.
The thing is it always throws me because I always take it as the ship in the universe of its time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why would Mariner see it as valuable that she's the first black? Because like that's something that's very human Earth 1960s thing. Like,
sure.
In the actual world of the Starship Enterprise, and real, like, there was probably tons, you know, but like,
it's probably still part of a culture, though. Like, if she met Rosa Parks, would she be as...
But Uhura, that's what I'm saying. Probably, like, Uhura, right? Was like, not the first black bridge crew officer of Starfleet.
It was just meta in our world.
Right? But it's like...
Yeah.
That's so I always, like, when people point that out, I'm like, oh, that's obviously correct. But also, it throws me because why the hell would Mariner think that in the 25th century? But I think you're right.
I guess. But if you're a writer writing this in the 21st century...
Yeah, you're trying to make a wink.
That might
nod.
Bleed in there, right?
Yeah. Or, like, makes you sense. Could do the meta joke where it's like, Like, you could have Boimler, like, oh, you like Uhura because she's, you know, black and a woman, and you're black and a woman. She's like, what the fuck? The first black Starfleet captain was in 2133. What? Like, you could just, like, turn it on him. Like, you know, like, we're, like, fucking way past colorblind at this point.
Yeah.
We've moved on to hating other species of sentient beings, okay? We're keeping it classier. Anyway, Brian K says, I'm excited about the musical episode and your speculation about who in the cast would perform well. Aaron thought Celia Rose Gooding, Uhura would be good. I looked at the Wikipedia entries in the main cast, and I agree. She was in a couple of musicals and has an actual discography. Research checked out, Brian. Goes on to say, I would also guess that standout performer would be Christina Chong, La'an. She has a musical theater background, was cut short by an injury, and she then turned to acting. Recall there was the one fantasy episode last season where Mbinga was a king and La'an is a damsel in distress princess type. She gets to belt out a few notes which are supposed to be dreadful, but I'm telling you they are not. I don't know if you watched behind the scenes to the episodes, but they're very good. Also found out that the dog in that episode that the princess had was Christina's real life dog. Well, thanks for putting that out to us. Says Ethan Peck, Spock is also in a single music video, but that's all he's got. Yep. Nothing about the rest of the cast struck out to me as indicating they perform well. And I think you're right. I think you identified correctly ahead of time the two standouts, and everybody else was okay.
Yeah, I agree.
I think that Ethan Peck might be a notch better than good too. Like, I just don't think we got to see much. Oh, I will say, now that we've seen this episode and I liked it a lot, I hope they never do this again. Because
why?
I felt like I gave you credit for like the essential truth of what you said, which is some of these songs are just okay. In fact, vast majority of the musicality and the lyrical composition I thought was good for a Star Trek episode. And I think it's going to be really hard if they try to bring this back. Like, if you want to mess with improbability fields and do like the Starship Enterprise in a video game, the Starship Enterprise entirely animated like Lower Decks, Starship Enterprise except for their anthropomorphic animals, like they use some kind of babe technology, you have talking pigs and dogs, but don't ever bring the musical back. I don't think you can do it. I don't think you got it.
Challenge, gauntlet, throne.
I mean,
Aaron Hubbard says
this
is
the best of the juice to be squozed.
Season three musical season, baby. Let's do it.
If you can bring it back and execute at this level or better, then yes. I just have doubts. I have doubts. There's only 10 episodes a season. Do we really want to waste it on a mediocre?
What if it's an away mission with Uhura and La'an? They get stuck in a series of caves. And as they try and struggle their way out, it's a musical episode. They're clearly the standouts, right? So let's
La'an
just...
La'an and Uhura made a musical episode in a cave! And you guys couldn't do it in an LA writer's room. I'll be damned. Anyway, yeah, I do like that's my big takeaway. Is like, this was a lot of fun. It was everything I was hoping for. Surprises abounding, but I it feels like a one-trick pony, but we'll see. Dominic says, based on what we learned at the end of the episode, I think the Klingon ambassador, we're talking about the previous episode, I think the Klingon ambassador was running down Klingon society because by those standards he is a coward. He fled the battlefield and would be dishonored if he ever went home, so why not deflect and tell the other side how horrible their enemy is? Also, if in that same vein, if the Klingon coffee burns him, is that a foreshadowing to the revelation that he's a bit of a pussy by Klingon standards?
I mean, he's definitely, not adhering to the Klingon, like, go down with the ship honor kind of thing, but...
Hot chalky
burn.
Hot chalky burn your fingies.
This
is to burn your little fingies.
Yeah, I saw Worf hold up milk jugs for like 9 hours while he's being beaten with rope or whatever.
Like John Tesh was shocking him with cattle prods. Right? Is that the one where...
It might be that one. I don't know. He does it a few times.
Yeah.
But yeah, to not be able to handle a little hot coffee.
Dominic continues, I take this as where Mbinga learned that you need a dedicated power supply for the transporter buffer. Poor Lieutenant Redshirt got flushed when they had to reset. Good point. Yeah. They continue to, yeah. Like I said, that the daughter line storyline's over, but it's still impacting the story. Mm-hmm. I think Chapel's unconsciously pushing Spock away because she's what she learned from Boimler last episode. That doesn't feel intentionally written that way to me. That's certainly something that gives her a little pause, but I was feeling that they were drifting apart even before then.
Yeah, it felt to me like it was a consequence of Spock's, the speed at which Spock was trying to push them into a relationship here.
Yeah, that's and she was already, like, and this is also something like she was getting into these fellowships to get away from the emotional awkward situation with Spock. So mm-hmm. it's like, but this is also a career move for her. So yeah, Spock was moving too fast. He's trying to rebound too hard.
Mm-hmm.
Giovanna said, I love this episode. For Deep Space Nine fans, it felt like a cross between In the Pale Moonlight and The Siege of AR-558. That's the Raymond Cruz episode we were talking about last week. I know you said in the past that you'd like to think the Starfleet officers are beyond all trauma and dysfunction, but I think stories of how we work through that are some of the best. But I'm also a counselor, so that's kind of my thing. I want to clarify. It's not that I have a problem with Starfleet officers being traumatized. It's that I don't like the idea that Starfleet officers would suffer in silence for 30 years of unresolved trauma and sometimes more. Like, I think these would get you, like, getting abducted by the Borg would traumatize the shit out of you. But that's why you have Counselor Troy. That's why you have Beverly Crusher giving you mood stabilizers. That's why you have, like, 300 years of progress on understanding people's emotions and psychiatry. And, like, it's just sad to me that a 90-year-old man like Picard would have this many ghosts and unresolved issues, emotional issues. So yeah, it's not that I don't think they can't be traumatized. It's like, yeah, I like seeing people work through their trauma. I don't like seeing people wallow in trauma, especially when they're in the 24th century.
Can I just say something about DS9? Because I just watched In the Pale Moonlight like yesterday or the day before.
Mm-hmm. That's the one where Garrick tricks Sisko into murdering a whole bunch of people.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Kinda.
Like Sisko knows he's breaking the rules by like trying to trick the Romulans into getting in the war with the Dominion.
He doesn't know how fucking.
But he tries to do it with a faked hologram recording of them planning the attack on the Romulan homeworld. But Garrick actually has a plan B, which is to kill the Romulan.
I haven't seen the show in like 25 years, but the showdown between Sisko and Garrick at the end is,
yeah,
I can still
it's
like remember
stellar.
Beat for beat.
The thing that bugged me about that episode is exactly what you said, like working through the trauma. Like Sisko is clearly traumatized and he's talking to the camera. He's talking to like a personal log because he says he has no one to talk about with this stuff with. And I'm thinking, you know, DS9 doesn't have a counselor on board. We never see anybody go to a counselor. Why not? TNG had a counselor on the ship. Why can't they have one on the space station?
The Cardassians didn't build a counselor's office in Tarak Nor. That's the
you can't repurpose.
I can't. No. Chief O'Brien's got his troubles, got his hands full keeping a turbo list running. You want him to repurpose a room for counseling? You gotta soundproof it.
What are they doing with the mining rigs that were up there? This forced slave labor that was like refining minerals on Tarak Nor.
What about them? They don't need
counselors.
Are those
just disused because they can't be repurposed for anything else? Like, we can't turn that into counselors.
I was intentionally misunderstanding. Like, why would the Cardassians provide their slaves with counseling? You know.
Yeah, it just struck me. Why the hell doesn't Federation?
You want
give...
a Starfleet counselor to take up a slave's quarters? What? Those things just store Dom Jot tables in. I think now.
Yeah, Quark has all his turnips in there or something.
Giovanna continues. She says, also as a minority myself, she parenthetically says she's an African-American woman, I was immediately distrustful of the Butcher and just because of how he spoke about other Klingons. I've encountered people who do this in real life. They'll denigrate their own race in order to ingratiate themselves with the ones that they want acceptance from, i.e. I'm one of the good ones mentality. This is especially off-putting for a Klingon, a species known for pride and honor. Worf would never. He would not. He would irritate the Klingons by being out Klingoning them. But, I mean, yeah, like, you see this along racial lines. You see this along gender lines. Like, the concept of, like, a pick-me girl who likes to differentiate herself from other women because, you know, she's wanting to get in good with the guys. It's, it is something that kind of, like, yeah, it feels wrong when someone's trying to make inroads with an out-group by tearing down their in-group. It's always something that you can be suspicious of. It's cheap. It's a cheap way to ingratiate yourself. Joe from Scranton says, I'm late to this one, but the talk of the saddle and the Enterprise, you forgot about TNG Starship Mine, where Picard is able to foil a round-eared Tim Russ trying to steal the Enterprise while the ship was in for a baryon sweep because he returned to retrieve what? Do you remember this, Jim?
No.
His personal saddle. They had to get all organics off the ship because the baryon sweep was going to destroy it all, and he left his personal riding saddle.
Oh, right. And then he discovers the whole plot. Yeah, I forgot about that.
And they include a brief clip of the script. It says, Lieutenant Worf, Captain, you keep a saddle on board? Commander Riker, Mr. Worf, I'm surprised at you. Dr. Crusher, anyone who's an experienced rider naturally has his own saddle. Counselor Troy, it's all perfectly normal. Jean-Luc Picard, actually came in handy. I'd only wish I had the opportunity to use it on a horse. Worf confused, of course. They're just like fucking with Worf here. Finally, wrapping up our feedback this week. TB, I have some good news and bad news. Bad first, I think I'm out on Strange New Worlds. But the good news is I'm giving it the Walking Dead treatment and still plan on listening to the podcast. Woo!
Yeah.
I thought we were going to lose a listener. A viewer. Yeah, we can lose viewers till the cows come home. Listeners? It's tougher. TB says, I've been a Trek fan since childhood, growing up around the old series reruns and the old series movies. I've seen every Star Trek episode up until recently. I hate watch the first two seasons of Disco and Picard. I mostly like Strange New World season one and Picard season three, of course, the love letter my fandom needed. But I just can't get into this season. The cast is almost universally good, but the writing is too juvenile, too self-aware. Stupid winky-winky catchphrases and franchise referencing jokes that just don't work for me, nor due to the Spock 90210 plot lines. Do the writers realize a Vulcan's lack of emotion is not genetic? It's the result of intense discipline. Changing his DNA wouldn't give him emotions. He already has them. Has the utter crap that Trek was for the last decade lowered the bar so low for this to pass for good Trek? Sounded like the new episode maybe was universally good, so that's a positive. But it's going to take a strike dearth of content to get me motivated to jump back in. But see, this is the you ran your batteries way too low on the Disco and the Picard to now you don't have your repulsors don't have the suspension of disbelief necessary to sustain you through a musical episode of Star Trek, for example.
Oh, yeah. Good luck with this one. I mean, I can respect it. You know, I don't think anything you're saying is completely out of line. I guess it just strikes different people differently, right? I kind of appreciate all the references. It's why I'm a fan of Lower Decks in large part. That stuff doesn't bother me, but I get you. Some of the stuff can be a little much. Catchphrase stuff, I'm right there with you. That stuff all kind of sucks the way they've rolled it out.
Yeah, but that's the thing. It's like I was really worried about the cringe factor, and I feel like that's the one that was big. I think there was one other minor one, but and here's the thing. I mean, I'm actually sensitive. Like sometimes I actually think, do I really like Strange New Worlds this much, or am I so starved for good Star Trek content that the second that anything even remotely gives me those feelings, I jump on it and I think I love it. And I'm looking around, but it seems to be a pretty universally held thought amongst a fandom that Star Trek Strange New Worlds is pretty fucking good.
Yeah.
Some of the professional reviewers that I follow that talk about it, like Alan Sepinwall, really seems charmed. So I'm maximally suspecting that I'm simping for Trek, but this feels like it's not perfect. It's not The Expanse. Holy shit. It's not even it's not even Foundation. But Star Trek never was. Like, we're fooling ourselves if we think that Star Trek yeah, okay, Deep Space Nine had some things that approached like The Expanse, but like, you know, Star Trek was never as good as like the best science fiction, the best hard science fiction you've ever seen. It was just like an alternate to Star Trek, you know. It was a little bit more hard-edged, a little bit more philosophical, a little less action-oriented. And to me, the trick is, it's got with the dancing bear of everything. I just can't believe the people that made Disco and Picard are making this show.
Yeah, because this feels light years better than that stuff.
But maybe this isn't, they got a new, like, you know, like if like maybe Zack Snyder could have made a great DC universe if like only one or two films were like the Zack Snyder depressing, dark, you know, super violent take on and everything. But you had other room to explore other tonal palettes. Because like I think about Strange New Worlds is like, I feel like it's the first Star Trek since, you know, the glory days of Deep Space Nine that is able to inhabit all those bodies simultaneously. They're able to do the the really thoughtful science fiction. They're able to do the character studies that make you really care about these characters and want them to succeed. And they do the goofy, funny shit that only Star Trek really does of all the science fiction fantasies. So I get it, TB. I'm sad for you, though. Maybe we'll talk it up and we won't be full of shit and you can jump back in next year if it improves a little bit. Because I do think that the worst of this, the Spock 90210 feels like it's running its course.
I hope so. I certainly do. I can't take much more of it. That's been kind of my biggest complaint with seasons one and two is I just don't care that much about Spock struggling with his emotions because I've seen it all before. I mean, that is the definition of that character, and him going through it isn't adding anything, you know? I already understand everything I need to understand about Spock, and everything you're telling me is just more of that.
The only thing I'd push back on is the whole change in his DNA wouldn't give him emotions. It's true, but like Vulcans are psionic. Like, they can read people's minds and transfer consciousness. They have extra brain and nervous system structures that we don't have that I think, combined with their Vulcan discipline, because if you combine them to, like, a baseline, I think, Romulan, it's a more apt comparison because, like, the Romulans are very emotional and their psionic abilities are much less developed because they haven't put in that discipline and training. But, like, yeah, I think if you suddenly changed your DNA from half Vulcan to full human, losing those structures, whatever those are, and like the hormonal differences, the combinations and stuff, I could see that, you know, overwhelming a person. But I can't talk into liking Strange New Worlds. That's point blank, bottom line, period.
If you want to go with an analogy, I'd say it might be like a bodybuilder, where you take that bodybuilder who can bench 400 pounds and you take away half their muscle, which is their Vulcan side in this case, and you say bench 400 pounds, they're gonna choke under the weight of that bar, right? It's going to crush their face because they're going to drop it on their neck.
Could you express it in like a zipper analogy? Or like, could it be soaked with kerosene maybe?
Yeah, if you soak a bodybuilder with kerosene and you ask them to bench 400 pounds, they probably won't be able to do it.
But if you took that kerosene away, then suddenly they could do it no problem. So
that's the opposite of my analogy. Yeah.
Star Trek at baldmove.com is how you can send in your perfect subspace bodybuilding analogy. Star Trek at baldmove.com. If you'd like to follow what we're doing other than Star Trek, currently on the menu, speaking of great science fiction, Foundation on Apple TV Plus. We're also considering Justified on the prestige side on FX, Hulu right now. You can follow us on almost every social media at Bald Move, except for TikTok. We're Baldest Move there. And finally, if you like what we're doing and you'd like to get more of it with less commercials, zero commercials, in fact, you can go to support.baldmove.com and keep us podding. Until next week, finale episode. We'll be back then. But until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.